Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 391. I'm Steve Raker, coming at you from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Andrew the LA Rabbit and Whirlwind X Kevin up in Canada. What's going on, guys?
It's still March MODOK madness, Steve.
It is madness. It's so mad that we're running a little late here between the Northeast superstorm of snow last week made getting together and recording a little difficult, and then the site being down for a couple of days, and then one of those Canadian conventions. You guys have conventions up there?
We do. Isn't that weird?
I'm sure they're all very polite.
Well, you bump into someone at a con, and then everyone's like, oh, sorry, didn't mean to. Except your friends. Your friends are just like purposely bumping you, and then you turn around going, who is that guy that just, and you're like, oh, of course, I know the guy.
Which con was this? Was this the one that's like all broken up in like the libraries and pubs all around town, or which one is this?
No, this was like the Small Fan Expo.
Small Fan Expo?
Yeah, it's put on by the Fan Expo people, but it's just Toronto Comic Con.
Cool.
So it's like maybe a quarter of the size. So you see some different people, because I don't know if if some vendors would want to be at both cons, or maybe they can't get into the other con, whatever reason. It's a good shopping show, I think.
Hmm. Well, the one vendor I was looking forward to apparently wasn't there. WWX Kev's Comics.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, no.
You weren't selling this time, huh? Just buying?
Just buying, yeah.
Speaking of buying, you can visit our sponsor, Nobody. We're proudly sponsored by Nobody. We're such an indie Marvel Noise podcast. But we do have a Facebook page, and you can find us on Twitter if you want to give us feedback. And you can hear us on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise. What else? MarvelNoise.com has all the episode archives, right?
Facebook.
Yeah, and not Dr. Noah Body either.
And Twitter, we have those accounts. If people are interested, you can tweet at Marvel Noise.
Kevin, more about the con.
More about the con.
Could you please step up to the front of the class? And tell us about your summer vacation.
I made it a bit Thunderbolts, like, this time.
I know of at least one piece that you acquired that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so I was going through the Thunderbolts lineup, and I'm like, oh, well, I knew Michael Wallace was going to be there. And I have several pieces by him already, so I was like, I should get him to do something Thunderbolts-related. So I've pretty much brought a lot of early issues and one of the later ones for reference, so you'd have a bunch of members there. And he's like, oh, I could do a Songbird. So I was like, oh, that'd be awesome.
Like on a jam piece, or was it a big single piece? I couldn't tell from when you posted it.
That's right. No, I pretty much not sworn off jam pieces, but, you know, I had the Spider-Man one with like 6 squares left out of 25, and I was just like, I'm done. So I've just been getting like commissions and stuff like that. So yeah, it was more of a full size. It wasn't like a small jam piece square.
Cool. Wait, did he just pick Songbird because of Anne Murray? Is this a whole Canadian thing, Kevin?
I guess you'll never know.
She had a big sword too, coming right at you. A big sword, big sound sword.
Well, I was joking on Tumblr at Thunderbolts, that Tumblr.com.
I have no idea what you just
Baron
said.
Zemo? I'm sure that's not the address. Well, that was pretty cool. But yeah, I actually got 2 squares from my Spider-Man jam piece as well. So
only 36 to go.
I know. I should have done a Thunderbolts one like back in the day or something that was only like whatever the multiple, proper multiple would have been. Like,
you know, I thought about that, but I don't want to pay somebody to draw Atlas or the Fixer.
Ouch. I think someone that's really good with tech would give you an awesome Fixer.
You know, I think of, like, doing, like, a team thing of this or that, and then I get to, like, a couple of characters, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to pay somebody to do that.
You don't want Daniel Axum to be on there? You don't want the Red Hulk to be on there, Steve?
With the mustache.
Is your Spider-Man jam piece, like, laid out like Spider-Man 100 or something? Where it's, like, all the little faces, and then you can have a big Spider-Man over it?
No, I'm not Mr. Creative with those jam pieces. I'm just like, lots of squares.
Yeah, you got some good pieces, though.
Yeah. But there was a lot of guys with, like, boxes and boxes of variants, too. It's like you were, at one point, it seemed like you were going down Variant Alley, where it was, like, $15 for a variant, then $10, then it's, like, 50% off, and eventually you get down to, like, the, like, $3 variants, and I'm like, I wonder if there's any, like, if I see something cool, like, I'll buy it, but I don't want to spend, I don't know, like, $50 or something on a variant. You know, most variants become worthless anyways, right? Yeah, like, someone doesn't want, like, Howard the Duck with some random guy from some scene in the movie. Like, eventually people are just, like, not having that.
I think the problem is the few that aren't are never going to go down. You know, there are that handful, but you're never going to get those for less than a crazy amount of money anyways.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's a few I look at, but I'm like, yeah, for like $5, I'll do it, but not for what they want.
If there's one thing I've learned after collecting comics for over 40 years now, is that buy what you like. Buy what you think is cool. If there's a cover and you just got to have it because it's a great piece, don't buy it for an investment, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing. People go, well, how did you? And I'm like, just buy what you like. Eventually, you'll get lucky. That Guardians of the Galaxy or Runaways or whatever that you thought was a cool concept no one else was reading, and then you'll get lucky eventually.
So looking at variants, is this how you picked up that Joe Jusco Spider-Girl?
Yeah, I guess that was a play, but that was, like, I don't think that's, a variant row type of thing, since those were, like, I think it was just the last month, like, those came out. Like, I guess this month it was the Venom one, or was it Reverse? Whatever the case. Like, it's, like, they were doing the Venomized stuff, and then the Marvel Masterpieces, I guess you can describe it as. But it's like a full cover instead of just like a corner box type of. I thought it was a corner box for some reason. I must have got bad info.
Man, Andrew, Kevin gets so squirrely when you try to pin him down and ask him something. Gets all dodgy and.
Why do you think I stopped? I tried to get him on that one con, and it was neither one of us have recovered from that. So I just let him go. If you love someone, Steve, you got to let them go.
But, like, some people are like, oh, these are going to be all over, like, certain variants. And I'm like, okay, like, if I see them, sure. So, like, the Venomized variants, barely saw any. Like, they were hard to find. And I'm like, okay, like, that's not a big deal. Like, but then the other ones, I was like, yeah, the Jusco Spider-Gwen. Like, there was... Basically, they are $8 and above, but I found one guy who had just one box of variants, and they were just those, and they were $5 each. So I'm like, oh, let me see if they have a Spider-Gwen. Like, maybe they won't, because she's popular, and it's not like the other things, like, maybe people, you know, they would be there, like, oh, he's done whoever before, but if he's doing a new character that's never been on a card or something, you know, that might be... You might not be able to find that.
Pretty cool.
But so I was going through it, and I'm like, oh, it doesn't seem to be in here. But by the time I got to the end, there was one in there. So I was like, yes, I'll buy that for $5. Which is basically the Canadian cover price anyway. So, you know, you can't go wrong.
Nice.
But the other variants were basically in variant row. Like, there was, like, I don't know. at least 10 boxes, probably more. And, like, it was older stuff, and I was just like, I bet you this isn't... It's like it was rough alphabetical order. I'm like, I bet there's nothing in here. But I found ones from the issues we just covered with the Bullseye, the Radioactive Man, you know, all that Ellis Dodato craziness from that era of variants. So I got, I pulled some out of there, and then I also found, I guess they were doing later on, I guess it was the 1930s variants, I'm going to say, 1920s, something like that. So it's like that era of like Songbird.
Like a gun mall?
Yeah. And then it was funny, like I was looking somewhere else and I actually found one Thunderbolts variant that was actually cheaper from one of the Thunderbolts eras. And then somewhere else I found another one that was like the hip hop ones. Like I know one place just had a box of hip hop ones, but they were like, I'm going to say $10 each. And then somewhere else I found like the recent Thunderbolts, like the Zub Malin thing. And it was a hip-hop one with our current incarnation. So I'm like, ooh, I'll buy those.
I can't imagine trying to keep track of all that. Because you forget how many theme months, not just regular variants, but... You were to mention all those ones, and I was suddenly thinking, man, imagine you're trying to track those down or keep track. It's impossible.
I can't imagine if someone has a whole collection of the Scotty Young, like trying to keep that going.
The comic-based software has a real hard time doing keeping up with all the variants and stuff. They just put out an email to their users regarding some stats and variants over different years and kind of how many publishers put out and stuff. And they came. There was a great number that if you're a user, go check your email. But I forget what the exact number was, but it was an enormous number of Marvel comics that didn't even have any standard cover. I don't even think it was just Marvel comics. I think it was overall, like the percentage of comics that had no standard cover, but only a few different covers, that kind of stuff. Like even DC Comics with their two covers in equal quantities for their regular books that come out now. It's weird.
Boom used to do that too. Equal. They used to have like almost every book had a couple covers. I seem to remember
Dynamite, one
of those companies did that too. Yeah.
You know, it's weird when you have covers that are like supposed to be one for one or whatever, and then certain shops just don't bother ordering. So even though if they're supposed to be like, unless a publisher is doing a 50-50 split themselves, sometimes it doesn't actually work out being 50-50, which is a whole other thing.
I figure the odds be 50-50. I work in as many Frank Zappa references in every episode that I can.
Nice.
You know, it's good when you book a hotel, though, and it's attached to the convention center, so you can just take a skywalk and you don't need to go outside. Like, that's always nice. I don't get always to enjoy that.
Is it cold up there in Canada land?
Well, it's not very spring weather. And it started snowing while I was there, and then the snow turned into rain. So what wasn't the greatest Saturday?
Comic books do love the rain.
Oh, they do.
All right, so jump into some recent reads.
That sounds like a fun show. Sure. I don't know if this... Is it still Marvel? I did go see the Logan movie, too, but I don't know if that's Marvel anymore. So
you tell me. You saw it. Was it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Not going to do any spoilers, but I'm pretty hard on some of the movies, actors. And I thought the actress they got to play X-23 did a really good job, because normally I beat up on kid actors. I'm like, these kids are terrible. I thought she did a good job.
You said you are hard on the Marvel movies, and then you say, but X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, I like that one well enough. And, yeah, I like them all, I'd say. I mean, the problem is I don't really love any of them that much.
Yeah.
So I just enjoy them, and then they fall out of my head almost right after. Although that one, this one's lingered a little longer. Normally, some of them ones, man, right after I'm done, I'm like, ah, I really liked it. But then, like, it just fades. Like a silly buddy impression of a comic left in the sun, you know? It just flies out of my brain.
It's become the opposite of what comics were to move. It's become the disposable entertainment, you know?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But I thought that one will linger. Like I said, well, you also have strong performances by Sir Patrick Stewart and, of course, the Wolverine himself. I think those two actors, Hugh Jackman and Sir Patrick Stewart, are pretty good. And they've been acting in these roles for a long time. So I think that kind of comfort and ease makes for good on-screen chemistry and banter and everything. And you're like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe they'd be just as good if it was their first one. But I think those two are well-suited to the roles that they have and have done them for a long time. And that's always an advantage from my unprofessional viewpoint. But I would say if you enjoy, and certainly I would argue clearly the best out of all the movies, the Wolverine ones, because those weren't maybe so good.
Well, they did two Wolverine movies, so I don't know, not so bad.
Yeah, those first two, I did not like the first two Wolverine movies, really.
But you liked Old Man Logan.
But I liked Logan, yeah. I thought that was a good, I thought it was a nice balance. I feel like they slowed it, pumped the brakes a little bit on it, which worked. And he's a great character to have, kind of crusty old dude wandering around. But it was interesting to see all the little Easter eggs. I'm not particularly bright at finding those, but obviously a huge bunch jumped out. The other problem is I'm of an age where I can't always separate what was from a comic and what was from a movie. So I come to certain conclusions and I'm like, wait, was that in the movie or am I being influenced by the comic book plot line?
So, you know, I've never read Old Man Logan.
Well, then you won't have, I mean, it's not a, obviously because it takes place in a different continuity setting, it's not the same book, but there is a plot line in it and sort of a feel to it that makes me think that they borrowed, they like the idea of like crusty old Logan on his own, kind of retired. But who doesn't like the retired gunslinger kind of trying to get dragged in for one last mission before he can retire? That cliche thing, you know what I mean? Just like that's been around. Yeah, since Westerns, like about 50 Westerns. Yeah, so I'm the plot line isn't going to put anyone on a new path. But like I said, that X-23 actress, I mean, I hope that we see more and it wasn't just kind of a one-and-done thing for her. But that's talent. I mean, it's got to be tough when you're a young person to have to act across all these different people and with special effects and there's fighting scenes and everything. And I thought those looked well because that was the other thing. I'm like, oh, is it just going to be bad CGI? Because they have the little girl. But I think they were able to integrate her with the effects kind of, you know what I mean? As opposed to just having it be all effects like they used to do. And those never look good. You know, when suddenly you're like, oh, that looks like the Spider-Man 2 with Dr. Octopus was on the HBO. And those effects have not aged well. Let's put it that way.
I thought you were going to call out at like a Star Wars movie or something.
No, just I feel the computer effects age poorly. I'm a sucker for model work. So that will always, even though, again, you could make the same argument that those maybe don't age as well. But for me, I enjoy the aesthetic of it. And also it looks roughly like it did before, but because computer modeling has gone so far, you can't help but look back at the older computer modeling and notice the difference, where I don't think the actual model use has changed much.
Hey, nothing beats Sinbad fighting all those skeleton pirates and stuff, you know? Good old Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I'm like, we're not going to go see the King Kong one, because I'm like, you know what? I'm good with the first King Kong. They don't need to keep remaking that thing. I like the stop motion animation. I did a little segment of it when I was in college. We did a little stop motion, the camera, and you click it and move it and click it. But it was so tedious. I think you could see my hand in one of the shots. I didn't get it away fast enough because, you know, you get kind of tired of doing that after a while. quality stuff. Hard to believe I'm not working at Aardman Studios right now with that sort of quality portfolio. That's so anyways, Logan, thumbs up for me if you like superhero movies.
I just finished reading a recent and a two-year-old limited series. And the first issue credits page starts, he sees it. He exploits it. He is... And no, it's not Martin Goodman. It's Karnak! The Karnak series finally finished up. 6 issues in 16 months. But we finally got there. It's The Flaw in All Things, written by Warren Ellis, with art by Gerardo Zaffino and Roland Boschke, with Dan Brown colors and David Aja covers. Very good. Worth the wait. I know it flew under a lot of people's radar because of the ridiculous publishing schedule, but if you were waiting for it to come out and trade, don't be afraid. It's a really good story. We've got Karnak, who's like, you know, he's done this. This is when this starts. He had just escaped the afterlife, and this started back in 2015, like in the fall. And so he's like a changed guy. He leaves the royal family and his post in Adelon as a like an advisor or whatever he is, and he sets himself up as this magistar of the second tower of wisdom, and he like fixes broken people. They come and do work for him and tasks in an effort to relieve themselves of their flaws, kind of like people go to work in the shaman's fields and you know, come back with a pretty good mental illness, you know, cure rate, that kind of stuff.
I was not a fan of the outfit redesign. I don't know if it was for this series or the one before, but I like the old-timey outfit. I didn't really care for the I'm a video game character.
Me too, but this, with all of the cloakiness on it, it fits the coming back from the dead. He's got some bandages on, and he is more monkey without the E. he's more like a monk and a recluse hermit type. So with this as kind of the backdrop, in this series he gets solicited by and effectively becomes an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So there's this kidnapped inhuman boy that he has to investigate, and of course the kid has weird powers, but he's like an adolescent, he's not a kid, but he is a kid compared to Karnak. His captors turn out to be this cult in the Chapel of the Single Shadow, and they end up worshiping this inhuman as their messiah. So even though he was kidnapped, abducted by them, he doesn't want to leave. And his power is to give everybody what they want, and like without having to work for it, which really bothers Karnak. But Karnak, through this whole series, he's such a badass, and he's got this crocodile smile peeking out from under his hood, and he speaks all cryptically, and he's just kicking butt left and right, and he shatters this interrogation suspect with like one blow. It's really vicious. There's a big showdown at the end. It's a really rocking good tale that. You know, it's Warren Ellis stuff. It's nice and edgy and very entertaining.
I do like Warren. I did enjoy, I mean, I only read, I think, the first issue or two, but I don't know. I just miss those old designs sometimes, especially when so many books move to the hip, young. I like my comic book character sometimes to be a little, you know, over the top. That's fun.
Yeah, there's not enough royal family in the Inhumans books these days. For sure. Like, you know, I just want to read about them core characters pretty much in a few tertiary ones, not a whole, you know, they split them all up and spread them out over books and stuff. Doesn't quite work as good. And that was one of my problems with the Inhumans versus X-Men series, too. That just wrapped up with its 6th issue, written by Jeff Lemire and Charles Soule, and the last issue was drawn by Lina Yu. and we've got the young Inhuman heroes, like Ms. Marvel, they learn that the mutants have only been fighting to survive because of the Terrigen Cloud, and then the whole thing gradually unwinds with the kind of a groaner of a, well, why didn't you just tell us? We would have, you know, gotten rid of our clouds for you. Like, it's like,
what? No, Steve, don't tell me that.
I'm serious. But there are some decent character moments along the way. Colossus makes a really cool stand. And Emma's, the White Queen, not white anymore, Emma Frost's deception regarding Cyclops' death, all gets brought into the light, and she goes off. And, like, it's, you know, there's a big ramifications. It sets things up for things to split up with this X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold again, with the new titles. But because the one group is the new old X-Men, like the young versions at a time, I still don't really like that whole aspect of things. And kind of with the furry beast being almost exiled from the group because he didn't want to go to war with the Inhumans in the first place, they've pretty much effectively replaced all of the 616, all of our modern versions, so that now there's kind of just one version of those characters, and it's the young ones from the past. You know, we don't have an old Jean Grey, we don't have an old Cyclops anymore. Angel's almost unrecognizable and off to the side, and same thing with Iceman in the X-Books. Straight, and then the Beast is not himself. He's, like I said, he's kind of been shunned. So the only version of those characters standing are going to be the teen X-Men, which the blue or the gold, I forget which, and then the kind of modern X-Men are going to be the other book.
Blue and gold.
Brings back memories.
I missed it the first time around, so I'll get to experience it live. Well, maybe six months delayed.
But yeah. Where's Dupe? Dupe should be filming this.
Let's see, what else have I been reading? Oh, I read Monsters Unleashed, that 5-issue event, and all the tie-ins. It was like an Avengers tie-in, Champions, Doctor Strange, Guardians, totally awesome Hulk. The tie-ins were all, they're just very tertiary. They were not necessary to read at all. But the main series was written by Cullen Bunn, and then each issue was drawn by a different artist, McNiven, Land, Lena Liu, LaRocca, and then Adam Kubert for the last one.
Guess what I bought last weekend?
The old Monsters Omnibus?
I bought this limited series, but I made sure to get like either the Frank Avila cover or they have the one of the monsters that's like the giant electrical, not Zax, but you know, one of those like 50s Marvel monsters where he's like 100 feet tall, punching down on a boat. Like, I'm like, oh man, because you know, monsters is my jam.
Definitely, I love giant monsters too. But this series has giant monsters falling from the sky, like monster bombs from space. And there's this enormous, I don't know, cosmos conquering mother Leviathan giant monster who has sent her brood to Earth kind of as heralds before she comes. And then she follows and comes to Earth. And it takes a few issues for old Elsa Bloodstone and our heroes to figure it out. They really stuff all the heroes in here. There's so many characters. There's too many characters, to be honest with you. But once it becomes clear what the kind of the plot is, that this big monster is sending these other monsters, and the big monster comes, and then it's just issue page after page of just big slugfest, multi-issue, crazy battles with the giant monsters and stuff. There's this Inhuman prophecy tie-in that, like, elsewhere in the cosmos, because there were other Inhuman experiments on other planets that the Kree did, that in the past a Inhuman was able to, from his mind, create these guardians to defend against the Mother Leviathan and put her in prison or beat her back or whatever. So that's the modern version of that is going to happen with our Inhumans. And you discover this kid who likes to draw Kirby monsters and draw monsters and stuff. And when he draws the monsters, they appear where he wants them to appear. So he becomes... Well, there's actually... The coolest moment in the whole thing is the Kirby monsters and Ditko monsters come to help defend the Earth with our heroes against these new monsters. And the kid who can draw them becomes... He has the ability to, like, deploy them in different places at different times to help fight back the new monsters and stuff. The monsters coming back, the Kirby monsters, led by Fin Fang Foom, of course. I mean, it was a moment... It was like a moment almost like the Black Panther leading the... When the zombie army shows up in Hickman's Secret Wars and stuff. But the whole thing I'm left with, really, and this is a reason that I'm not very interested in the spinoff series that's going to come out of this, that, again, is this new Inhumans world, kind of supporting that. But at the same time, the problem is, in comparison, the new monsters... Sorry, guys. They just don't hold a candle to the old monsters, to the old Kirby Ditko monsters. They're afraid to be goofy. They're sometimes overly complex and rendered. And, you know, that it's... The old monsters were just plenty enough. And this new guy, he's going to have his, like, four or five kaiju that he... I think his moniker is going to be Kid Kaiju or something. And he's going to get a book. Anyway, there were fun moments and certainly fun, big, crazy double-page spreads and great dialogue by Fin Fang Foom and Goom and Googum, son of Goom.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember at the end of the first issue, having the kid reveal really put me off the book, and I think I haven't gone back to it since.
Yeah, you realize it's a setup for an ongoing series starring him, and he's another Inhuman. That now they've got, you know, they made the Devil Dinosaur, Moon Girl, an Inhuman. They've got Ms. Marvel as an Inhuman. They're trying to build up this, everybody's an Inhuman, not a mutant anymore.
Well, so everybody's really young. Like, they're pitching, not just... like 17, 18, but I get the feeling, isn't that kid like 12 or something, like really little?
When are we going to learn that Miles Morales is a Inhuman? That's what I'm wondering.
Oh. You think they would go there?
All right, before...
Why not? When, what are they... There's nothing they're holding on to, right?
What?
Well, I mean, there's no... It's not like that character has some... crazy history that's really tied to anything. They can make him an Inhuman in a heartbeat.
And Alicia Masters, that's why she sculpts so good. Why not just keep going crazy?
The spider had a little bit of the Terrigen Mists in it.
That's right.
So when it bit him.
But it would be like Ultimate U Terrigen, though.
That universe died, I believe, about three events ago.
Still where he came from.
Speaking of things that should have died, that died and should be left dead, I read the Clone Conspiracy, the Spider-Man Clone Conspiracy also. Big, massive crossover between, like, the Clone Conspiracy, there was five or six issues and an Aftermath issue, and then it crossed over into Amazing Spider-Man, and there was a few issues of The Prowler and Silk. Both of those tie-ins, Prowler and Silk, you really could have skipped. And then Spider-Gwen, there was a huge tie-in with her. She was played a major role in the series, but it didn't cross over into her book at all.
Yeah, we got that awesome other crossover instead.
But it's like Clone Conspiracy, here we go again, right?
But the thing is, I'll say this, Steve, like, after Slott's done, like, event after event, and then he says... Oh, you're going to want to order this one because, you know, the orders aren't high enough, whatever, something big is going to happen. And I'm like, well, every time you said it before, you were right. So that's how you sort of build up trust and everything, you don't miss out on something. And he was right that something big does happen, get revealed in this book. The thing is, that I wouldn't say I was waiting for that thing to happen. So that's where I didn't lose out. It's just like, oh yeah, that is like, I recognize that something big happened, but I'm like, I'm not really into what happened.
All right. Can we talk spoilers then? Since this is wrapped up, can we?
Sure.
All right. We don't have to get into the details, and this is was an enormous crossover with tons of character moments. And small moments, big moments, and lots of plot twists. So even just spoiling on a couple of things, you know, as we discuss it, isn't going to really spoil the whole book. There's plenty to read and gain on a reread as well. But so the new Jackal is there, and it's not Miles Warren, but it turns out to be Ben Reilly, the clone who died, who turned to ash.
Yeah.
And then he takes up the Jackal's mantle? Like, what the... He was Peter up and he has his memories up until the day he died? Like...
Yeah, this is the thing. I'm remembering stuff as you're saying. If you're a fan of Ben Reilly, and now he's doing, like, this evil stuff, are you happy your character came back, but he's, like, really messed up? Like, that's... Doesn't that seem weird?
And they just did this whole run of Kane being the Scarlet Spider in his own series. And Kane was the one who was the disfigured one who was all like more of a, almost like a golem at times. And Ben Reilly was the one who was more relatable and all that sort of stuff. And because Ben Reilly was dead, it seemed like that was the reason that Kane was the Scarlet Spider, because there was no Ben Reilly anymore. Yet now they bring back Ben Reilly and he's like this. I just seem like Peter said, all the power, none of the responsibility.
Yeah, I can get behind some of the like ideas in the series, but once you get to the cloning thing, like obviously, like you have superheroes and everything, so you have to, like, you obviously don't have a problem believing stuff, right?
And so,
but they get to a point where I'm just like, yeah, clones is cool and everything, but where it's like, yeah, like we, like the. Something about the process. I guess the process wasn't clear. I just wasn't believing. Yeah, and we have all your memories recorded in a computer type of thing. And then we just transplant. You remember everything. You died. And I was like, where is this going? Like, this, it just didn't. It was too far of a leap for me from some of that stuff.
Again, the thing of it being Ben Reilly and him being the Jackal, the bad guy. I mean, he would hate Miles Warren. He's the spider clone, for crying out loud, you know? But this is supposed to make me want to read a new Ben Reilly book? You know, I didn't even read the Scarlet Spider one. The last one, the Kane one, that failed. Now we're supposed to buy this one, and when he was this bad, and he comes out of it being all scarred like Deadpool and stuff...
But then they're going to reveal that he was the original and that Peter Parker was the clone.
Yeah. There were a lot of other good angles, though. The lizard angle was creepy and entertaining.
Kevin, well, they started... Yeah, I guess it was some of the better stuff.
That was interesting, how they left set up.
But I kind of... I guess you got to kind of figure that certain things aren't going to happen, because it's like... Oh, we like leading up to this, like certain characters have been killed off, and you're like, well, if it's gonna be a clone story, like let me guess, they're gonna get cloned, right? Because it's like you wouldn't just kill off, like, I guess you could be, you know, it's you can pretty much guess like certain things were gonna happen.
Yes,
but well, yeah, was, like we've well, got some good moments
thing.
Though.
The clever thing of like everyone who Spider-Man ever let die is brought back. So then you should be relieved of all of that guilt and stuff. That was a clever, you know, sadistic twist on Peter's thinking. You know, in slots, you know, it's his turn writing this stuff. He threw in some good stuff there, like his touch on the lizard I thought was good. His handling of the rhino, another tragic rhino story, right?
Yeah.
And that final moment where he's charging with Spidey and Spidey tells him you just gotta kind of keep moving forward like a rhino. That was pretty heartfelt. And all the Doc Ock stuff with Anna Maria or whatever her name is, that was fantastic.
That was probably the best stuff. The whole Doc Ock stuff continues going.
And then he comes out of it with a new life, right?
Yeah.
Here's what bothered me, though, along the clone stuff, too. There's a whole thing where the clones are all deteriorating, and he's got an army of, like, Miles Warren henchmen. And one of them is apparently the real Miles Warren. Did Miles Warren die a long time ago, and it's been just clones of him since? Like, what do you mean the real one was one of them? Like,
you know, that doesn't really bug me, because Miles Warren is like the clone guy, so I'm just like, I don't know.
But he should be
I guess that's cool of me. The thing that bugged me was the whole, like, you read the main series and then you read Amazing Spider-Man, and you get to, like, the argument issue where they're trying to convince Peter it's all cool, and I'm like, no it isn't, and I'm like, why can't anyone see that this is not cool? It's like, oh, we'll just clone everyone, and everyone in the world will be clones, and it'll be awesome. And I'm like, no, it won't be. Like, they didn't convince me of that argument.
Andrew, you would have liked the Silk tie-ins, because, if I'm not mistaken, you used to like the Maddie Franklin Spider-Woman, Spider-Girl? Was that the one, or was it a different
one?
Yeah,
I was just actually reading one of those little digests I had on my bookstand of some random, you know, they collected them in those sort of digest size, and I was just reading, I think it was like 13 to 18, or just some one. The comic book store had them all for $1, so I just was picking up random ones.
Well, she had died a horrible death in the past, in the regular continuity, but Silk meets a clone of Maddie Franklin and befriends her, and then she dies at the end again, and Silk feels her loss. And then in the Prowler issues, the interesting thing was that Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman appeared. I mean, she's not Spider-Woman, but she was Julia Carpenter. But she also wasn't Madame Web. Wasn't she Madame Web? Wasn't she the new Madame Web? Didn't that set her up as the new, when the old Madame Web died? I don't know.
Well, she was just in the anymore.
It's all.
I just read the Wade Somni Daredevil, and she was in that book. So that's from, what, 3 years ago?
Everything's messed up since Brand New Day.
But wasn't there the guy who is the weaver on the web?
Yeah.
Too?
Yeah, he's still there, weaving away.
He's still weaving away.
But isn't he a newer...
He kind of reminds me of the Madame Web thing now, the weaver.
He's the... he was the Benedict Arnold of the... whatever they were called.
The Hunter.
Inheritors. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
man, that blew up quickly, didn't it? That whole...
Well, it took a while. I don't know about quickly. But with the, you know, thing about Miles Warren, too, like, he knows who Peter is. He knows who Spider-Man is. If he was the real Miles Warren all this time, too, so. But what about the whole Mephisto thing? And I don't know. It seems like a lot of people know who Spider-Man is again.
Man. Well, he never should have went on with Tony Stark and had the press conference.
All right, and I got one last blast for you. Man-Thing, number one. Written by R.L. Stein of Goosebumps fame.
Is he still burning innocent people?
I hope, by issue two. With art by German Peralta and Rachel Rosenberg colors. You know, I'm a big Man-Thing fan, so it was a little bit like getting beat up reading this. Because, like, Ted's Ted in there. He talks. He's unemployable in L.A. You know, he's, like, down and out. He stinks. He can't get a job. He can't, you know, not even playing himself in a movie. It's very strange and a different take. But yet, it's honestly a tale well told, though. It's written well, it's drawn well, so I admit I'm dying to know what happens next. I'm dying to see where they go with this.
You'd think he'd at least be able to give a TED talk.
It's really it's weird. All right, should we get on to the feature of the evening?
Sounds good to me.
Let's get into some Thunderbolts and Deadpool.
All right, Marvel Noise fans, we're back. Who are we, you ask? We are the Thunderbolt Squad team review. We never really came up with a name for this segment, did we? It's like where we talk about Thunderbolts.
It's the Thunder Watch.
And that was the voice of WWX Kev, and also me and Super Steve, with your Thunderbolt segment, Justice Like Lightning, Marvel's Most Wanted. We're back. As loyal listeners know, we've been alternating with the excellent Power Man and Iron Fist retrospective. But now it's Thunderbolt time, pre-Luke Cage. How pre-Luke Cage? Well, you're about to find out. This is the segment where we started with the original Thunderbolts, way back in the last century. Where you went back over 100... Oh, wait, no, not over 100 years ago. But anyways, we went back to the last century.
100 issues.
And started. 100 issues. And started and covered all kinds of weird tie-ins, and we're back. We're back to pick up right in the middle of some classic Marvel events. But as we do with all our segments, we always have Kevin kind of set the table. He was the original Thunderbolts fan. I was new to the flock, and Super Steve was in and out as his whim suited him. So, Kevin, where are we? Who are our Thunderbolts? Where are we? Take us to the spot in time.
So, last episode, I believe we burnt down the house. So, with the Dark Avengers starting, characters going their separate ways, and that Dark Reign banner appearing on a bunch of Marvel books here, guys, this is barely Thunderbolts. This is almost like Fight Bolts. Like, that's how un-Thunderbolts this is. Because when I see a bunch of assassins going around killing people for Norman Osborn or whatever, that's not what I think about when I think about what Thunderbolts is about.
Yeah, but that's what Dark Reign was about, right? I mean, it was that was the whole status quo of that time, is that Norman has a high political position. He's in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D., turned it into Hammer, and he's the big bad. So he's kind of has two main books. All the other books are about the heroes kind of on the run from him and dealing with it, but he's got the Dark Avengers, and he's got the Thunderbolts. But with the Dark Avengers being his focus, the Thunderbolts book becomes this odd book of his other sort of stealth team that isn't in front of the media that needs to get the dirty work done.
But you want to hear our lineup? I crossed everyone out of the roster. First time, that's probably... Well, I wouldn't say first time. Like, I guess technically that other one was a Thunderbolts run, right?
Yeah, the Fight Bolts wasn't really heavy into your traditional... I know you're a big fan of those comics, Kev, so I don't want to... They're part of the canon, but they're not what one traditionally thinks of as Thunderbolt members.
I still think that was a special episode we did.
Well, it was special because there was no Super Steve, that's for sure.
Exactly. Super Steve's like, see you guys.
Well, it was breaking. Give us the lineup, Kev.
All right. Our lineup. Is Black Widow number 2, the other Black Widow, doing Black Widow-like things. Oh, and she has this great, kind of creepy, multiple eyeball soldier mask on sometimes. Ghost. He has intangibility. Hey, Moonstone. What's up? Looks like they got to replace her with someone. How about that? Ant-Man, the O'Grady version. He shrinks down in size and basically goes where he's not wanted. Paladin. Palomine is a mercenary for hire. Headsman. Big axe-wielding guy. Or our wielding guy. Welding? Wielding?
First you weld it, then you wield it.
Okay. Makes me think of Web of Spider-Man, but he's more of an Untold Tales of Spider-Man kind of guy. So that's our current lineup.
Wow, such likable characters.
I know. Norman says this is the Zed list. And I was like, well, not really. Like, maybe Headsman.
And I believe we're picking up with 128. Is that correct, gentlemen?
Correct.
It is. But there's 2, 4, 6, 7 characters on this cover. How could so I don't think we have the full lineup yet.
Well, this is Andy Daigle, Roberto De La Torre, and Frank Martin. And I'm going to rip. I did not like this issue. They decided to pull in the real world, which I find tiresome usually. Like, something if you want to have some kitschy kind of at the end, like for two panels, Jimmy Carter or, you know, Nixon is running the secret empire or whatever. But to go with your realistic style and to weave the president so integral to the plot of these two issues, where it's basically just Norman returning, getting out from underneath the blackmail that Doc Samson and Songbird had and getting the president to convince him.
Yeah.
That's these two issues, 128, 129. And I did not, like I said, it's, you know, the story is clear, well told, all that, but I just got no interest in it. Like, it really puts me out.
Yeah. And you hate him. It's like he got Alfred to dress up in the goblin suit.
And attack
Air Force One, so it's like, hey, look, it wasn't me.
Yeah, I know, and he says, oh, anyone could put on that mask. And I'm like, well, then we can use that excuse for other things, too. I don't know, it's just a Norman always wins type of story, and I'm like, yeah, okay, can we move on to another story? Not one of my favorites.
That was
issue 128, not 129.
They could have had that with, like, some unknown commissioner or whatever. I still would have had some issue, but I would have liked it a lot more than if it wasn't the actual president, but just some, it's the commission on some made up department or whatever that you wouldn't know. But it just took me out constantly having the president there and everything. And you're like, ugh, this isn't the real world. It's a comic book.
De La Torre's art is that.
Didn't this get some press, I think, at the time? Like that Amazing Spider-Man issue?
Yeah, they should have put him on the cover.
Yeah.
I like De La Torre's art, though, throughout it.
Oh, yeah.
And bringing in Yelena Belova is a great idea.
I like Black Widow. I like some of these. Like Ghost, but I think with Ghost, like, it wasn't until the Jeff Parker run where I really liked that character.
Yeah, until they did that solo issue where they really got into who he was and what his deal was. Absolutely.
I'm vaguely, now was he was the Iron Man villain from like the 80s, right? Who used to steal supplies and secrets and everything?
Yeah,
corporate espionage stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
But this is a much different, I do enjoy this take on him being like a crazy conspiracy guy who doesn't shower and bathe and always stays intangible. But I appreciated that they took, that was a fun twist. I was not super familiar with this Black Widow number 2, so it wasn't a character I knew with any great, I don't know her lineage that well. I mean, I knew there were three Black Widows. So,
well, it depends how many of these Red Room characters you consider Black Widows, I guess.
So that was, and like you say, they recruit her into the group. I didn't know, I now know from having read in the future who the head man turns out to be. So it's hard to, it does leave you with some big questions when you're reading it now, being like, how did this all get set up? But I'm sure it will come. Yeah. That's the problem with, I know some things now. I'm finally, while I may have read some of these random tie-ins, I now know things in the future and I try and wipe that from my mind as much as I can.
Maybe that's your inhuman power. Like, you now know the future. You saw the future, Andrew, so now you're reading these and you know.
Well, I am reading these on the on my little tablet on the Marvel Unlimited app, which you can join us. But the issue, the thing I didn't like, is we head right into a Deadpool tie-in, but flipping back and forth between these is not easy. On, you know, you gotta back out and then go in and pull up the issue, and I mean, I know it's not really the most dreadful problem, but still, it was one of those things where you're like, man, this is kind of a drag.
You can tell that this is planned, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, Melissa shows up here, and it's like, oh, that's kind of strange. Like, she's, you probably think it's just like, oh, it's just a check-in to see her on what she's doing, or she's on the streets or something. And it's like, no, like, this pays off later on.
And they replaced the other, you know, you've gotten this, like you said, Z-list team here for Deadpool to totally kick their butts. You know, what's cool here is it's you got these two issues that lead into the next two issues that cross over with two issues of Deadpool, right? It's a four-issue Deadpool Thunderbolts crossover. But the two issues of Deadpool prior to this crossover issues are also important to what's going on, because what happened with Deadpool is he was hired by Nick Fury to sneak into like the main Skrull base or ship or whatever and steal all of this biogenetic information, including what the Skrull Queen's vulnerabilities were and how to kill her. All right. So he sends that information to Nick Fury, but it gets intercepted by Norman Osborn, who uses it to concoct his Skrull Queen killing bullet that did the job and won him all of the attention. And in these couple of issues, issue 6 and 7 of Daniel Way written Deadpool, Deadpool learns that. He discovers that Norman has sent the Tiger Shark and Hydra Bob after him.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. And the Tiger Shark is that weird, freaky like looking Tiger Shark.
The big fin. Savage.
It's the Thunderbolts Tiger Shark?
Yeah.
Nice.
And at the end, Deadpool realizes that Norman is the one who took the information and used it to kill the Skrull Queen. So he sends Norman an extortion note like, hey, you pay me what Fury was supposed to pay me because you got the information and you used it to better yourself. And I know, I'm going to, you know, tell everybody that you stole it and all blah, blah, blah. So that leads to Norman saying, we got to send these Thunderbolts after Deadpool and kill Deadpool. Then it makes a little more sense what's going on.
Well, you can see what Norman's priorities are, I guess, because like the Punisher got killed, basically. Like, there's no way the Punisher can like be alive. But it's like Deadpool. Oh, I'll send like I won't send the main team. I'll just send this low grade team after Deadpool.
If I'm not mistaken, the list was a little bit further into the Dark Reign stuff than this.
Yes.
He's just getting started here.
But I enjoyed it's Paco Medino and Juan Velasco with Marty Gracia on colors in the these tie-ins. And it was fun to see some of the same characters because you're going back, you know, and looking at the two different art teams and how they take it on. And that part I really enjoy. And all these Deadpool ones are also on the Marvel Unlimited, including 6 and 7. But the tie-in issues are 8 and 9. And it's the magnum opus is the 4 issue. So it goes Deadpool 7, then Thunderbolts, then Deadpool 8, then Thunderbolts. So
I never said, read
zip
7.
Back and forth.
You know why I didn't read 7?
Why not?
Because at the end of 129... it says, hey, read part 1 in Deadpool number 8.
Yeah, but like
then
said,
later on, they mentioned, hey, this story starts in Deadpool 7. And I was like, wait, what?
Well, it started in 6. Well, it really started in the beginning of the series with the whole...
Yeah, but they're not going to tell you, hey, read 6 issues before.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It really, 7 is really at the end when it really...
Yeah, it's the end of 7, too.
Yeah. So you don't really need, like, you can just jump in at 8 and be there. Just, I agree with Steve. I thought 6 and 7 were kind of fun issues, too. I like Hydra Bob.
Big time.
And the Tiger Shark. And I love when he it's funny to read the contrast.
Bob, dude, Hydra Bob goes to give Deadpool a high five, and he shoots him through the hand.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's just funny, like, one has a real heavy tone, you know, the Diggle Bun. Then you go to the Deadpool, which is very not heavy.
And
so it's fun
and that's
to mix
what
those two.
And that's what we experience in the crossover, is this mix-up of, like, Deadpool being a little bit more of a bandette type of dancing through this whole experience, while these Thunderbolts are so grim and gritty trying to get the job done in their special ops unit way. And it's really funny with the two of them contrast, just like you say.
I don't really like Deadpool around this time, though. Like, I was in the Joe Kelly thing. So then this one, it's like he's talking, and then they have white captions. So I'm like, are the white captions supposed to be someone? Like, I know he does that whole talking to the reader thing, but it just seems like it's more than that. And I'm like, well, maybe because I didn't read the main run, maybe they set something else up. Like, it doesn't seem like it's directly.
It's him talking to himself.
His thought process.
Yeah,
and
I thought
then
it was
you get into this
himself,
whole fantasy
yeah.
sequence in 8, where I feel like they're just like wasting time. Where they're like, "Oh, we'll just show Norman as a like some kind of troll or something." Yeah, it's weird.
I liked how in the Thunderbolts issues, though, in 130 and 131, even though it continues to be Diggle writing, that they brought in the artist of the, I think it was at the time, the second Deadpool book, Bong Dazzo.
Yeah, yeah. I think I enjoy his work more.
I really liked his work on especially drawing the Black Widow and stuff and Taskmaster.
Yeah, that's weird that Taskmaster shows up. And like, I like Taskmaster, but it's also a weird role for him.
It was a great role. Him being like, it was like a buddy movie, him and...
So to give the bare bones of this, as Steve laid out, Deadpool knows that Norman owes him money, so he goes to Avengers Tower to collect. That's where all the psychedelics section, he gets gassed and imagines Norman as a big giant. And that's when the Thunderbolts show up to beat him up. But it was all a ruse, as you flip back over to the Thunderbolts 130 and you find out that they wanted him to track him back so they could get his information. So they sort of let him escape. I mean, you know, let him being... You know, they're still going full pell-mell after him. So he gets a teleporter so he can have back to Deadpool and teleporter jokes. But, yeah, it was just funny watching the art styles are a very deliberate shift. But you're right, I like the Bong Dazzo and Joe Pimentel and Frank Martin do a fun job, especially when you read them right next to each other. It's very, kind of remind me like a European style, like a heavy metal almost.
Agreed.
Which I really like, and they're setting it up much more military, where he's just being silly, and it ends with Deadpool hitting on Black Widow, of course, and that goes back to his issue, and that's where you bring in the Taskmaster and everything, and he's got his plan set up to stick it to Norman.
I like how Black Widow has that, with the perspective, that weird cable sniper rifle.
Yeah.
in 130.
But it ends up that they end up capturing Deadpool. Well, you know, it's a little bit of confusion about, because we have two Deadpools, because Taskmaster is also dressed as the Deadpool. So as I call him, the Deadpool. So, Deadpool.
They even make a Ronin time, joke because of the discovery, yeah, it being in Avengers Tower.
So he ends up fighting them, but also flirting with the Black Widow, of course. But I like when he goes to fight Ant-Man, who like goes into his costume, he just shoots himself to try and shoot the Ant-Man.
Yeah, that's good.
I like how Black Widow tries to kick him, and he's like, sorry, there's a gun in there.
And a lot of bottom of feet in the 131, which is always fun. But, you know, he even mixes it up with Norman, and the headmaster comes and cuts his head right off.
It's totally.
But Andrew, she likes guns, so they have something in common. Black Widow and Bullseye. So Bullseye.
That's
Deadpool.
I like how it keeps going back and forth too with them, just each trying to one up each other. It's just very entertaining.
But
he
arranged to have that Taskmaster come and sew his head back on because he had stolen Norman Osborn's credit card. So he used it to pay off the task. But yeah, like, it was fun. Just a radically change in, you could tell, I don't know, it felt like we had those weird two issues with the president, and then we go to this four-issue Deadpool crossover that seems, it was a lot of fun, but just not anything like what we had just read two issues of. So... yeah, but I definitely enjoyed the four-issue crossover way more than those two issues that we started with.
Makes a skinny little crossover, or skinny little trade paperback, too, this crossover. It was called Dark Reign Deadpool / Thunderbolts, and it has the four issues in there. Entertaining, though, I gotta admit.
Yeah.
And I like the Jason Pearson covers on the Deadpool issues, too. Really like his stuff. and that follows the next two issues of Deadpool are also kind of the second part of this story because of these characters, Thunderbolt's characters, not getting the job done. Norman sends Bullseye, his dark Hawkeye, in the Hawkeye garb, you know, after Deadpool for two issues. And you think that they go back and forth, one-upping each other between Deadpool and the Thunderbolts in these two issues. It gets exponentially more crazy when it's Bullseye and Deadpool, because they're each trying to think each other's next, you know, move, and they're each trying not to underestimate each other, and it ends up with its own little buddy movie quality that was really classic, because Bullseye in the beginning talks to Norman about how he doesn't do this stuff for money. He does it for fun, all this killing and assassin and all this business. And he's got so much money backed up somewhere, you know, he doesn't even know how much money he has. It doesn't even matter to him anymore. So when things get hot between him and Deadpool, finally at the end when Bullseye realizes that Deadpool is going to outlast him and that he just can't deal with the almost Bugs Bunny quality of Deadpool kind of keep coming back and outsmarting him, because that's worse. You know, it's not just getting hurt and getting beat, but it's the getting like totally humiliated and outsmarted and having the rug pulled out from under you constantly by this other character, that at the end he decides to pay, that he lies and pretends that Norman's making him a deal and is willing to give him the money to end this. And it's really, you remember back that he had said in the first issue that he had all this money stashed away. So Bullseye ends up paying him off from his own money to get Deadpool to go away. And he says, hey, but part of the deal is Norman wants you to lay low for a few months until this whole thing boils over. And you know Norman's going to implode with the way that he is and everything. So then he's covering his own butt to be able to go back to Norman and say, I took care of it, Deadpool's gone. It was really funny. I like Way's Deadpool. This stuff was good. It was tied into the main Marvel Universe, and it gave Deadpool certainly an established role more amongst the heroes, despite his kookiness.
This was my first time reading this era of Deadpool, so I enjoy. I mean, I only read, you know, four or five issues, but I liked it well enough.
I challenge you both to read the two-issue Dark Hawkeye issues that follow here, the next two issues of Deadpool. They're on the Marvel Unlimited, and like I said, they're really fun. Whip through them, and even enjoying the art. The two Jason Pearson covers are great, too.
But this isn't Deadpool talk. This is Thunderbolt talk.
Well, I was going to say, we'll get back to regular Thunderbolt talk next episode.
Wait, I thought we were moving on to 132. That's where the title gets good again.
Well, we talked about more than six issues, Andrew.
Yeah, but I kept reading because it got good. So I was like, I have to. Don't you ever have that where someone's got to cleanse? Those two issues were.
I know.
Were, to my taste, the worst two issues I've read in this entire run, including the Zemo Limited series, including Fight Bolts.
Wow.
All that. I couldn't get into it. It was. Not any fault. It's my whole that, like, we're going to try and be serious, yet have the President of the United States, and which just doesn't work. But then it really, 132, I'm like, boy, it's the same team, but it really, once they drop that and go back to being a comic book, and they go back to giving them characters character moments and everything, I'm like, it really picks up. So as far as I'm concerned, you can just not read those two issues and pick up there, and you're not missing anything.
Well, you get the conclusion of what went on with thinking that Songbird and Samson had the upper hand. You know, it took them two issues to get there, but you find out that at least that loophole is closed and Norman's protected from it. But yeah, I had the same reaction of like I needed to keep reading, but it was the Deadpool issues I went to.
But overall, I don't know. I guess how do we grade these issues of the Thunderbolts, Kevin? What do we say?
Some of these covers are getting rather hit or miss too. Like this 129 with the Green Goblin, not my thing at all.
No, I didn't like that take of the goblin looking like it's a mask or something.
I don't like any of these covers at all, except for the Jason Pierce and Deadpool ones.
Yeah, I would. If I had to pick out of these four, I would probably pick 128.
Hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
Although I would probably pick 131 just because I like the Black Widow and Deadpool hanging out together.
I don't know, because like, the issue is, like funny, that are trying to be anyways, whichever way you would go. But then you have, like, this ultra-serious and then cover and everything. And they have, it looks like everything is, like, a leather type of thing. And is that supposed to be a spider on her shoulder, too? Or on her back?
Sure, she's the Black Widow.
I guess so. I don't know, just something... And Deadpool's face doesn't look like it's burnt up at all. It's just a regular mouth, isn't it?
That's a good point. Good point. I will say, though, Kevin, if you do get... You should check out at least the cover to Deadpool 7, because it's a Days of Future Past with Deadpool and Hydra Bob. And I like
those. Do you want to know what 2008, or was this 2009 Kevin was thinking?
Sure. What was 2009 Kevin thinking? Besides, there's a character in 7 that you might enjoy. Hmm. There's a fish villain who reminds me of Mr. Fish.
So you have 128, which has, funny enough, a 4 out of 5 rating. I don't agree with this.
Really?
Whoa, 2000... Old Kevin is much interesting. He was a big fan of this. Well, you're Canadians. What do you care about the president?
Yeah.
I remember the 2008 Kevin, though, not thinking this was great Thunderbolts, and yet he gave this issue a 4 out of 5. Like, I don't quite understand how that can be.
I know. I wish we could ask him, because I'm also... I mean, it's not like it's... I'd think it'd be... I don't know, it's hard. It's not like it's not well done. It's just so... The idea is so misconceived. Like, it's executed well, but I'd give it, like, 2 out of 5, I think.
But you know what the questionable thing is? 129 has no rating for some reason.
He's like, that's well, it, I'm done, I'm out.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't know if he... Maybe he didn't get to read it quick enough to do a rating, but I'm like, if it's not on the top of his stack and he's not reading it right away and rating it, then I don't know what is going on. Like, that's not a good sign.
Well, especially if you gave the last, the part one, a 4 out of 5. I mean, clearly part one was working.
Maybe it's because they were sort of tying things up. I don't know. But 130 and 131, he gives both a 3 out of 5.
Wow, so you liked it less. Were you? Do you recall if you had read the Deadpool tie-in issues at that point, or you didn't know?
Definitely didn't read the Deadpool tie-in issues.
Protest them.
Like, I wasn't having any Deadpool or stuff, and I was never a fan of Way's writing, so definitely wouldn't have picked that up.
I can see you knocking it. You only read half the... I mean, you miss some of it. Although I think it would read. Did you read the issues this time, or you didn't?
I read them this time. See, this is the different thing. Like, if you're just reading them as part of a subscription, and something reads in 10 minutes or whatever, you don't care, right? You're just like, I have a monthly fee or a yearly fee. I read whatever. It doesn't, like, your whole mental process is still, like, I read them, and I'm like, yeah, that's okay. But if I was reading month to month a fast comic and I'm paying like $5 or whatever the going rate is, there would be a large I'm not impressed factor.
Well, that's fair. That's a
because
fair
on
point.
Marvel Unlimited, you see something stupid or Norman's a troll, you just go click, and you're done reading the issue.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. That the pressure is on for current creators to give us a reason to buy these things at full price and not wait for them to come out digitally, because you know, I have a lot of complaints about things that are going on. I mean, there's two Hulk books and neither of them are Bruce Banner. you know?
I don't think... To me, that's not a problem, though, because I have the problem of too many good Marvel books right now. Yeah. But, of course, this comes down to the... You read what you like, and if you... And then, like, anything else, you can just read on Marvel Unlimited. So it's... Like, you shouldn't be reading something that's really terrible.
I'm not saying it's terrible, but I wouldn't be paying $4 for... I wouldn't be paying $8 a month for two Hulk books that neither of them are the Hulk. Or two Cap books where neither of them are really Steve Rogers. Or two Iron Man books and neither of them are Tony. Thor's not Thor. There's several alternate Spider-Mans out there. At least we still have a Peter Parker one. There's two Wolverines and neither of them are Logan. You know, I said before, earlier in the other segment, that, you know, the X-Men aren't the adult X-Men anymore, and too much of the Inhumans isn't the actual royal family Inhumans, so they're asking a lot to give us, they're asking a lot to want us to try out these more watered down or legacy version characters at a higher price than we've ever paid before.
I was talking with someone about how I wonder if they kind of regret offering this Marvel Unlimited, because it certainly trained me, because you read it differently. Like Kevin was saying, I read these as complete stories. I read the Silk thing, and now I might have went and bought a trade paperback or run down the issues. I really enjoyed it, but I don't know. I knew if I waited, I could just rip through it here. I just read the Somni Wade Daredevil, and I have a bunch of those issues, but, you know, I missed a month or something, or didn't get to the store or whatever, and I just let it stop reading it and then waited and read it, you know, a week ago and really enjoyed it. And it feels like, because they've sort of, there doesn't feel as much to me like a main continuity in any way, which is good, but it's bad for their monthly sales because I'm no longer pushed to run out and buy these books now. Like, I got to have it now. They've sort of trained me to read it whenever I want to read it, which is bad for them. And if they want to move floppies right away. I mean, it's one thing I like about the podcast, you know. A lot of times it makes me read or makes me go buy particular comics to give me more structure, because I just don't feel like this, I gotta read it now, I have to be current. I don't know how I got, like I said, and I think part of them is the Marvel Unlimited that sort of decoupled that.
I wonder. I can't say I've ever run into that, really, that situation. Like, I guess if a book wasn't good enough, I'll just go Marvel Unlimited. I don't know. It's funny, Steve, that you mentioned those books, because I don't think I'm reading many of the books. Like, I'm reading different books. So I guess maybe that's a thing in itself, that it's like Old Man Logan or whatever, and I'm like, oh, like, I don't need to buy that monthly. Like, I'll buy Unstoppable Wasp or something.
Ooh, I do
else.
Like Unstoppable Wasp.
Yeah, I'll buy that instead. And then I saw that I wasn't reading Hulk, but this weekend I picked up like an issue or two of where they're introducing that Asian super team, the Protectors, and I'm like, oh, I want to check that out.
And I have been buying Thunderbolts.
I'm not saying that any of these books are bad books either. I'm saying that they're not the core characters, you know, in their core identities. Even though there's multiple books, there's no book with regular Steve Rogers as Cap. There's no book as Bruce Banner Hulk. There's, you know what I mean? That's all. It's just,
yeah.
But everything is higher priced. So, if it wasn't for Marvel Unlimited, I wouldn't be reading a lot of this stuff, because it's at this price, it's hard to just try out a book or just stick with it just to keep the numbering going, or all those old little contrivances that used to keep us on titles through the ups and the downs. Now I'm not.
There's only one book I read to keep the numbering going. I don't do that for any book. Well, I guess I never did, because I was like, I can only read so many books. There's only so much of something. So it's like Daredevil's the only book that I read. And I guess if it was terrible for a long time, like, I'd just be like, I can just pick those up at a con or something, right? But I was making the connection. It's funny that, like, I'll try new characters or something, but some of these other things, like the Old Man Logan, or like, if that's the Wolverine book, like, that's not the books I'm reading. It's funny.
Also, it's got to be a book for me that makes it worth the monthly reading. Because so much, I'm also trained now to read books in batches of 5 or 10 or whatever. So that's what I've enjoyed, like, about Unstoppable Wasp. I feel like each issue really does kind of work on its own. But if I feel like it's just part one of a story, like, that's a big turnoff for me paying the money and taking the time and space and getting the story. And I'm like, you know what, if they're going to just treat it like part one of 6, then I'm just going to wait till all 6 are available and read it that way.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. I think a return to sort of, because I'm also decoupled from the events a bit, because those events I think read better when they're all done for the most part. I don't know how to pull it to. I've seemed to always enjoy them more when I can sit down and read them all in a group, because, you know, there's always delays or what, and then you forget what happened You're going back and all that, and it just seems like they've worked so hard to train us this way. I think it's kind of biting them a little bit.
I'm still in the glow, though, of the, as far as the events going, I haven't been able to take any event that serious since Secret Wars. I'm still in the aftermath glow of that I thought really was successful, even though it had the delays at the end. But I really enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed the whole suspense and tension that led up to it over all of those monthly installments leading up to the event. And then once it was in it, I was dying to get that next installment. I couldn't wait for it all to be done to read it. And I enjoyed going back and reading the last issue before when the new one came out. I go read the last issue quick just to catch up kind of and really soak it in. I really enjoyed that event, and it was nice to have a home run among, you know, in somewhere in the darn ball game.
I also enjoyed that we did a real podcast focus on it, and that was kind of fun, running down the issues, and like that was something that made it worth more engaging in that kind of way. Not only did I enjoy the story, but it's fun to chat with you guys about it and kind of get into it, where if we're not all buying in, it's less fun to just, I'm just like, oh, I'll just wait. But you're right, Secret Wars was, and all those weird, the books are really just weird and different and fun.
That was a great event, though. Like, if we were to cover every event, you would get so tired of that. Like, imagine if you had to cover, like, Original Sin or Secret Invasion or something. I would just be like, I don't want to rag on a book for, like, months and months and months. I think you could tell that Secret Wars was going to be good and that the ramp up was good. And you're like, man, I hope this is really gets nailed well.
But to counter that, I thought when I sat and read Original Sin on Marvel Unlimited, it was a fine story. Like, it's not bad to just carve out some time and read the 8 issues, you know, one after the other. But it can't support tying every book into it for 8 months or whatever. That's where it falls apart.
Not every Avengers story should be turned into a big event. Yeah. It worked with the Secret Wars. I don't think it so much worked with Secret Invasion. I liked the new Avengers aspect of Secret Invasion, that whole build-up that was going on to it. I just didn't particularly like the, you know, the core title once it, you know.
Well, the one we're talking about recently, Chocolate Rain, I enjoyed some of it. That was one of the ones I was able to check a lot of them tie-in trades out of the library. That was, I think, before I was Marvel, so I would just read them that way. And I really like reading it via trades out of the library in batches of 3 and 4 was perfectly fine, but it was kind of my recollection at the time, it was a bit of a hot mess. Yeah. From like when you're in the event, you know.
I thought the same way back in the day of the Axe of Vengeance, where it's like I thought that was a real fine Avengers story, but not necessarily, you know, throughout all the other tie-ins and stuff, but it works sometimes, doesn't others.
Yeah, I think I'll use your answer, Steve, for a lot of events where it's like, it's not terrible, but it wasn't good enough for me to buy monthly. I find the little smaller crossovers or family events are usually better than the big thing. But it's funny when you talked about the prices earlier, that's what I wanted to get back to, because you probably have the feeling of just escalating prices. But if you're in another country and you have exchange rates, I have the feeling of the prices are a roller coaster, where the prices were really high, then they came down really low, then they went back up, and they went back down. So sometimes my reading maps to that. So it doesn't feel, I don't have the, like, I wonder how my reading would have been different if the prices were just going up all the time rather than what kind of crazy system I have with the prices.
Well, the other thing, I mean, price is important, but there's also, for me, space is a big thing. Like, I much prefer paper, but I can't have, you know, I only got so much room, and we have a little place, and I'm not getting rid of, there's a bunch of comics I'm not getting rid of, so, I mean, I do a lot of purges and give books away, but there's some point where it's like, I don't want it, and then there's also the time of, like, because if you read it monthly, like you were saying, Steve, you got to go back a little bit. When it's a great series, that's fun. But if you do that for everything, you're really... I mean, even when I was buying floppies, I would sometimes let them stack up anyways, which seemed now, in light of the digital thing, kind of silly.
Let them stack up and not be sure if you still like the book until you caught up, you know? That's tricky.
Well, also just because I knew, like, oh, I'm going to... want to read these all in a bunch because I'm not going to remember, you know, I need to have it set down. They're clearly making this to be like a thing and I have to do it in the way that it was read to make it sense instead of just stealing time, because this Marvel Unlimited, the other addicting thing is sometimes I'll just pull it up and flip through and grab something and read a few issues of whatever from recent or from 20 years ago or something. It's just... Sure. A fun, like I said, I think they built this monster that maybe they didn't mean to, because I can just get lost in it with this, my new tablet. Once you find the interface for it, it makes it different. I mean, it still won't replace paper in my heart or anything, but from a practical standpoint, it's hard to beat. Kids, I was one of the last guys you think would go digital, but I've seen a complete turnaround. It's scary.
You just have to make the jump and start experiencing it, and then see the... it's fun seeing the color of seeing things backlit, too, is nice.
And also, if you're having trouble, try maybe a different interface. When I had my wife's old iPad, I did not like it. But now that I have this newer tablet that's mine, it's a little bit lighter, I think. Dimensions are a little bit bigger. It's made all the difference in the experience. And I have a hard time on the computer, too. I use Chrome for my browser, and that Marvel Unlimited does not like Chrome, but on the app, on the tablet, it works great. So if I know a lot of people complain, I've complained about the interface, but maybe kind of forum shopping around a little bit, you might find the one that clicks, because once it clicks, it really helps. And then that's Andy's, hopefully not patronizing advice to people.
Did you check the new releases for Marvel Unlimited this week?
No, I don't. I just go in and I browse, and I'm like, what do I feel like? Well, like I said, I really enjoy the podcast because it drives, like, okay, we're reading Thunderbolts or Power Man or whatever, and then I'm in the P's and I might scroll around and see, oh, what else is here? And or go up to the, or something will strike my fancy, like, oh, I wanted to read the Doctor Strange. So I'll read that and get caught up to wherever it last was and then try and remember where I left off and flip around. I mean, I'm sure I'm missing things as a result of this catch-as-catch-can, but
you're missing what Declan Shalvey recommends this week.
But I'm also, as you guys know, and the listeners have surmised, I'm a huge scatterbrain. So sometimes I can't even find paper. Like, someone will be like, oh, for Bernie Wrightson, my wife was asking about Bernie. So I had to go pull out my portfolio edition to show her some. But you'd think I'd be able to find that in 2 seconds, but that took a 10-minute search. And that's like a huge... How big are those things, Steve? Like,
big enough that I just reached back and touched mine.
I mean, so to find that, you know, that I should instantly have. So sometimes finding these single issues can be tougher for me because I'm such a slob or whatever. But on the machine, you just hit the button and they're all... No, none of this... Wait, where did I leave that one? Maybe I left it on my nightstand or by the couch or all the different places I have stacks of comics, like some sort of demented hoarder. One day when I'm old, a stack of comics will fall on me and I'll die.
Happily.
Thank you.
Do you know why I asked you that question, though, Andrew? It's because they put up a bunch of Thunderbolts today from the first few trades.
Because they'll fall on me, and then I'll be like, well, I'll die happy, and then it'll be like new universe titles or something.
Oh,
no!
I fell into the pit of comics.
We should end on a respectful note, too, that this week we lost Bernie Wrightson, that you mentioned, and thank you for getting me one of those portfolio editions and signed by the man. That was an awesome gift at the time, and certainly even more knowing that those opportunities to get his signature are over.
Yeah. I didn't have a lot of the few times I such a nice guy, you know. Comic people really, I mean, I'm sure there's some bad eggs, but I've had so many great experiences with some really people that, you know, don't have to be nice, because it's not like it's really, you know, he didn't get a lot out of it, being nice to some random kid buying a bunch of stuff, but I always appreciate that when they're really so nice and generous with their time and everything. It was really, really sad when I saw that. I don't normally get too caught up in this person passed away or that person, but that one really made me pause for a little bit. And I even tweeted something, and I almost never do that, so yeah, it was just kind of sad.
Here's to the guy who scared the pants off of all of us at one time or another, and rightfully so. Yeah, I had the pleasure of meeting he and Liz three times at cons in the last decade or so, and fantastic people. Certainly will be missed, and artwork will be treasured. You can enjoy some of his Marvel stuff. He did the Hooky Marvel graphic novel of Spider-Man and the Hulk Thing Marvel graphic novel, that one where they're fighting. That's a good one, too. Few other covers here and there, but that old King Cole story from way back when. There's a few things, not as much as for DC. Our loss, for sure. All right, that's another episode of Marvel Noise. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah, so I hope the Thunderbolts are going to return to the subplots, or the reverse of that. Next episode, well, not next episode, but
well, I think next
Power Man and. You know, so
the guy spoiled it a little by saying it gets better. So don't let if you're 2008 Kevin, don't let 129 be the last issue of Thunderbolts you read.
Next time that we're on, we will have the rest of Mary Jo Duffy's Power Man and Iron Fist run, and also a Star Wars roundup. There's a new Star Wars event that begins with Star Wars issue 31. And Dr. Aphra number 7. So I am going to read up to Star Wars 30 and Dr. Aphra 6.
Wow.
I better read some Star Wars.
Should I read all the Star Wars, guys? Should I just read as many as I can?
I thought they were fun. It was maybe a year ago that I read a bunch on Unlimited. Really liked it. So I was surprised at how, because that title's been so up and down from various points, and I'm so weird about loving the original books, which most people don't. But I thought there was a lot of stuff to really get your teeth in. I mean, it's kind of funny. They were able to create a whole new character that has a spinoff. When's the last time that happened in a comic book movie tie-in spinoff property?
We're ending for real now this time.
Yeah, for reals. Until Karnak sees no more flaws.